Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the VGI Partners Global Investments Limited conference call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Victoria Arthur, Investor Relations Manager. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for making the time to join today's call. I'm here with my colleagues Robert Luciano, Doug Tynan, and Adam Philippe. By now, you should have all received your personalized documentation for the VG1 entitlement offer that was announced on the 13th of May 2021. The purpose of today's call is to address any questions that you may have in relation to both the VG1 entitlement offer and the concurrent IPO of the manager, VGI Partners Limited, before you decide how to respond to the offers. The reason for holding the call today is that there are some key dates approaching. If you want to sell your entitlements, you have until the close of trading tomorrow, the 30th of May, to do so. If you wish to take up your entitlements, you have until 5:00 p.m. on the 6th of June to complete your application and to make the payment. We encourage you to use the VGI offer website, which automatically calculates the number of shares you're entitled to apply for under the manager IPO. In a moment, we'll open the lines to questions, but before we do so, Rob would like to say a few words.
All right. Thank you, Victoria. I just started looking at my own entitlement offer acceptance materials on Monday, having just got back from overseas, and I really hope that there's nobody on this call who finds it as confusing as I did. I've been assured by our lawyers that there's nothing we could have done to have made the documents any simpler. The complexity is unfortunately the price that we have to pay for making the VGI Partners offer open only to our existing investors, and that was a very important point when we structured this transaction, was to make sure only our existing investors would benefit from the IPO of the manager, VGI Partners Limited. Overall, I'm pretty disappointed that we really bent over backwards to make this offer attractive for VG1 shareholders, and the documentation has to be so complex, which apparently is due to all the rules and regulations that exist today. Hopefully, by the end of the Q&A call today, we'll have addressed any questions you have about the offer and why it's structured the way it is and the decisions you have to make. There is one message I'd like to get across very clearly right now, and that's if you do not want to take up your entitlements, you should sell them on market. If you do this, you'll extract value from this offer, and you'll extract the value because you're a VG1 shareholder. Entitlements trading finishes up at the close of trade tomorrow. To reiterate, if you do not intend to take up your entitlements, and if your rights lapse without being sold, you will receive zero value for them. Again, we would strongly encourage you to sell your entitlements on market before the close of trade tomorrow if you do not wish to participate in this offer. I'll just pass it back to Victoria now.
Thanks, Rob. We'll now open to questions, please, operator.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star two. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone. We will pause momentarily to allow questioners to enter the queue. Your first question comes from Piyush Gupta from Anisan. Please go ahead.
Rob and Victoria, hi. If you do intend to take up your entitlements and your VGIR options lapse, have you lost any value? When you take up your entitlements, you get the value of your VGI 1R?
Well, if you take up your entitlement, Piyush, you then, you know, have the ability to buy VG1 stock at $2.34, and for every $4 you put into VG1, you receive a dollar of manager. So the reason why the VG1Rs, so the rights are trading with value or some amount, is simply because the market is saying the multiple or the price applied to VGI Partners Limited, the manager, is an attractive price as deemed by the market, and whatever revaluation the market wants to put on the manager is being reflected in the entitlement, in the rights price. And we did this very purposely. We have allocated new shares in VGI Partners Limited, the manager, at 8.8 times earnings, and we can discuss that metric and the earnings of the group. And we've done that at a level that is substantially below comparable companies, and the closest comparable is trading on a multiple in the mid-20s of a similar size of funds under management to VGI Partners. And as a consequence, one could assume, although we won't give a view on what the market will do, but that there should be a revaluation. And it's been very purposeful that we wanted to reward our investors, VG1 investors and our fund investors and managed account investors, with an allocation of the manager at a level that we think increases the probability of share price appreciation on the day that it's listed on the ASX, which is the 24th of June of this year. And that's, I think, that's why there's value in the rights today.
Can I ask you a clarification question, Rob? It's just that the two dates don't match. So if one is intending to take up the VG1 entitlement, payments due by 6th of June, one would not normally exercise an option much prior to that because markets might fall and so on, and yet the rights expire tomorrow. So there's a week exposure, I guess, and I just need to clarify that if you sold your rights by tomorrow, you couldn't then take up your entitlement, I presume.
Yeah, well, of course you can't, because you've extracted value from your rights. So you've got, it's a binary decision. You either sell your rights and you've extracted the value from the rights in the marketplace, and then you just keep your existing VG1 shares and there's nothing else to do, or you take up your entitlement, and in which case you're not, I'm not sure about your comment on the market, everything is locked in, you receive your VG1 shares at $2.34, and for every $4 you put into VG1 shares, you receive a dollar of value in the manager at $5.50 a share.
Yeah, VG1 is currently, your offer price is above the NTA. I was just observing that markets can rise or fall in a week, so normally
The offer price isn't above the NTA, Piyush. The NTA, we just released the updated NTA on Monday. It's $2.39 as at Monday, although that's an unaudited number, but that's come from the company and reviewed by a number of people internally. And the offer price of VG1 stock is at $2.34, so it's at a discount.
Okay.
To NTA.
Sure, okay, thank you.
So I hope that's clear, but...
Thanks, that does clarify.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Piyush.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jordan J. Shopov with Wade Capital Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Rob. I have a couple of questions which are probably more to do with the management company and the portfolio rather than the entitlement offer. So I hope that's okay. My first question is on VGI's work on the short side. In the public filings, you've noted that the short book has either broke even or made money in absolute terms since inception. I've heard short sellers say that it takes a different type of mindset to generate alpha on the short side, as most people just can't handle the constant negative reinforcement of a rising market. So I was hoping you might talk a bit more about your processes and capabilities on the short side, particularly what type of skill sets or traits you've tried to cultivate within the team, and also how your focus on managing downside risk has translated over into running the short portfolio.
Yeah. Look, Jordan, that's a really good question, and probably something that I would discuss at one of our investor roadshow briefings, which we held the other week in each major capital city. That's also something that I'd be happy to discuss on a VG1 in a specific results call, or even at our AGM, and you're welcome to attend those events, and we can go into it in substantive detail then. And I don't think this is the forum for it. This is a information forum on the capital raising for VG1 and the listing of the manager. I think that, you know, we've been short selling now for over 11 years, and we've done so successfully, and as you said, break even to positive results in a market where the index has more than tripled. And I think that really sums it up for itself, that's a reasonably acceptable outcome. So we obviously have very substantial processes and systems. We continue to refine them, and we continue to learn from any errors we make. We've made a huge investment in IT infrastructure and have parlayed that into our screening tools. We're very substantial risk management. We're increasing that capability through the recent hire of a data scientist based in our New York office who is helping us evolve our IT and computer systems, particularly on the short side and the risk management side. And to sum it up, we've got now 14 people in investments on a single strategy, and that would mean that we have probably one of the largest investment teams allocated to a single strategy, certainly in this country and elsewhere in the region. So, you know, that hopefully gives you a rough sense of our capability, which is very substantial indeed. I hope that answers your question, and you're welcome to attend future events.
All right.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Graham Simons, private investor. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I'm willing and happy to take up my entitlements in both the fund and the company, but I haven't received my anything in the mail. I'm in WA, so maybe that accounts for it. But if it doesn't turn up in the next day or so, can I transact both investments online?
Yeah, Mr. Simons, could I ask you to drop me an email, and I will be able to get those forms to you, and I'll give you a call and walk you through the application process as well. So, if you want to email, and this also applies to anyone else listening today, if you haven't received your paperwork, you've got any sort of procedural queries, could you please drop me a line on investor.relations@vgipartnersglobal.com?
Partners Global.com. Okay, will do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you. The next question comes from James Edwards, private investor. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. My question is around a sort of operational update on the manager, and it's got two parts. Just on an update of recent performance and also on the dividend that's expected to be paid in August. So the first one is the prospectus mentioned that there's an unrealised performance fee at the end of April. Could you give us any update on how this accrued performance fee may have moved over the past month? And the second part to that is, I understand all shareholders or new shareholders and the manager will be entitled to a dividend to be paid in August. Could you please comment on how any recent performance might have impacted this dividend, which is expected to be paid in August? Thanks.
Okay, all right. Thanks, James. So in the prospectus, we have mentioned that there is a currently accrued performance fees of roughly $22 million, and that was as at the 30th of April, and that's on page 16 of the prospectus. And since then, I think we've released some performance numbers that would suggest that our performance has gone up since that period. So I don't believe we can talk outside of the prospectus, as performance improves, the accrued performance fee, one could conclude, may also improve. But we've got to stick to talking about the prospectus, and that's as at the 30th of April, it was $22 million. But like I said, our performance has increased since then. So I'll leave it up to everybody else to come to their own conclusions. And then in terms of the dividend, well, post this transaction, the manager will have $66 million on its balance sheet in cash. And so if we work through the mathematics of a $22 million performance fee, assuming that it hasn't increased, and then you tax effect that, so you times $22 million by 0.7, you would net $15.4 million, and then it would depend on what the board would deem to pay out of that. We've said in the documentation 50 to 75% payout ratio, and then it would depend on the requirements of cash for the company. Having said that, it will have $66 million in cash, and it's fair to say that being VGI Partners Limited, and I can only speak for myself as a substantial shareholder, and Doug can speak for himself as a substantial shareholder, but we're very focused on looking after shareholders with substantial fully franked dividends, and what the dividend will be will depend on the opportunities at the time. But I think it's always good to, you know, focus on the structure that we have in place here. And the structure that we have in place, certainly for myself and Doug, which is also different to, I think, other groups, is that we have a base salary. The base salary is, in line or, representative industry levels or perhaps even below industry levels. And we do not participate in any bonus pool or any profit share pre-tax pool. We receive the base salary, and then we are 100% compensated thereafter as shareholders through fully franked dividends, and therefore we are very focused as the executives but also as shareholders on optimising fully franked dividends. So hopefully that answers the question.
It does. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Payush Gupta, NSN. Please go ahead.
Rob, I had a question about the valuation of the company, but before I pose the question, I'd just like to preface it by saying that I think the authenticity and integrity of trying to do the right thing by investors is commendable. So I'd like to recognize that. The question around valuation is, whilst you correctly note that the IPO pricing is perhaps below other asset management companies, the composition of your earnings is very heavily skewed this year towards performance fees, which can have great variability. So I guess as a, from an analyst perspective, you know, could you unpack that in terms of whether real value is on the table here or whether it's more ephemeral?
Yeah, well, look, you know, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, I guess. So first point I'll make, Piyush, is, and I'm not sure what document, it's a good question, and we've had that question from a few people, and I would urge you to read the prospectus in detail, because that will reveal a lot more answers. But I'll make the first point that we, the existing shareholders, are not taking any money off the table. So that's point number one. So, Piyush, you've been in financial markets for a very long time. You know, name me an IPO where the vendor, there is no vendor consideration. So we're taking no money off the table. And in fact, in the IPO, the existing shareholders are actually taking up their full allocation, which will be the case for certainly Douglas, myself, and you know the amount that I'll be taking up is reasonably a substantive amount, given that I'm one of the largest shareholders of VG1. So you know, to reiterate the point, no vendor consideration, and in fact we're taking up the same offering that everyone else is being offered. So that's, I don't think you'll find that that's really happened many times, in fact, really ever before on the Australian Stock Exchange. So I'll get that point out of the way first. The second point then, to answer your question, so if you go to the entitlement offer document, which most people should have received, maybe various people haven't downloaded the prospectus, and if you go to page 25 of that, it talks about the manager's FUM and revenue characteristics. And there's a very important little bit of data there which says the go-forward recurring management fees. And the important point is that in 2018, we listed reported management fees of 19.2 million in the calendar year. The issue with all this data is that VG1 listed in the end of fourth quarter of 2017, and VG1 has not paid VGI Partners Limited any management fees up until last month. And the reason for that is the IPO or the listed investment company VGI Partners Global Investments Limited did something that was very unique, which was pay for all the upfront costs and also all the ongoing costs. So since the listing of VG1, we've incurred, I think the rough amount is $16 or $17 million worth of upfront costs, which traditionally has been paid for by the shareholder. And all the ongoing costs have been paid for by the manager as well, and there has been no revenue received. So it would be instructive to look at what the run rate is, because we have just started to receive revenue from VG1. And that on page 17, which was based on a FUM level of the end of April, which is obviously higher as we perform, so it's a higher FUM level now, was suggesting a run rate of $34.3 million in base revenue. And so that's a very important data point to give you a sense of what the base earnings of the management company would be, given that we've provided the information of what our rough operating costs are, and our operating costs have been tracking at about, I think in the disclosed numbers, $16 million, which has included really all of our staff, expanded offices, Tokyo premises, etc. So you already have that bit of data on base profitability. And then what we have discussed previously is that if you were to have a rough 10% level of performance using the same data, 10% level of performance, Piyush, we would receive $41.5 million in performance fees. And in our average year, our return since inception has been 14.6%. If we were to do 15%, we have a $62.2 million performance fee. Our best performing year was in 2013, 44%. And if we were to do a 40% year, we would have a $165 million performance fee, Piyush. So it looks like we had our best performance year, and it looks like there's a lot of performance fees. But I would suggest to say, Piyush, that the $44.9 million in performance fees was in a relatively lackluster year of below average returns. And if we went to average returns or slightly above average returns, you would see a $62 to $83 million performance fee.
Okay, I understand. Thanks for that.
And I think that would drop the multiple into the low to mid single digits.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Mark Turner from Stad Proprietary Limited. Please go ahead.
Robert, Mark Turner here. The question I have is more administrative. I was interested to know how you going to match the rights that are purchased to when you buy those rights, what happens administratively to enable me to take them up?
Huh. Well, do you know what, Mark? That is not a question for me, and I am going to pass that question on to either Vicky, or I am lucky to have David Simons in the room who understands how these things work. So David?
Look, seeing as Rob's thrown to me, I will give it a crack. Basically, once the purchase of rights has settled, you then need to call the shareholder information line, which Victoria can read out that number in a moment, and they will give you your unique entitlement offer code, which you can then enter into the system when you go to vgioffer.com, and the website will then recognise the rights which you have purchased, and your forms will be filled out in order to make the process of taking up those shares very easy.
Yeah,
and that'll be matched when you do the placement.
Yes.
So, Mr. Turner, that's on 3 days after you purchase your entitlement. If you call the offer information line, which is 1-300-046-609, they will then give you your entitlement code, which you then use on the VGI offer website to do your application.
Okay. Thank you, Vic. Can I just have a follow-up question on that? Is there any purpose at all in seeking additional shares when you don't have the rights, or do you think that's unlikely to be worthwhile?
Oh, look, we would say it is worth putting your hand up for overs. That our banking friends at Moelis tell us that usually in a retail rights offering you get around about 50% take-up. We would expect that it will be a bit higher here as a consequence of a couple of things. First of all, the fact that it's a pretty fresh register with everyone actively having purchased this stock over the last 24 months, but also because of the nature of the offer and the natural interest that the manager is getting. But it would certainly be worth, if you are interested, putting your hand up for an extra 30 or 50%. That would be the sort of level that we could see being likely to be satisfied. If you want to go harder, you face further risk of scale back.
And it referred to the manager's rights to place those shares wherever they like. Do you have any sort of policies around that in terms of trying to make sure you've got a good spread in your register and that people are evenly balanced?
Look, we've not given that a great deal of focus just yet, but we certainly respect the fact that people putting their hand up from overs are showing support, and I would imagine that we will be treating everyone who puts their hands up from overs in a pretty fair fashion.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ben Hughes with Epic Capital. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Rob. Just a question on capacity overall and the ability of continued performance. I mean, we had a conversation around performance fees earlier. Obviously, one of the benefits is that you're constrained in capacity. Can you just give us comments around your view on how that will play out going forward?
Yeah, all right, Ben, good question. Well, look, we do a global strategy. You know, you can see our top five investments, biggest investments, CME. Next is sort of, you know, a toss-up between Amazon and MasterCard. You know, we own some pretty scalable names. Having said that, we're not tempted to, you know, anyone who's looking at the manager to think that we're going to copy other global fund managers who have become asset gatherers. That's certainly not the case here. We're focused on post the VG1 raising of not raising any more funds in the VG1 strategy for at least 3 years. The other funds are closed. The $300 million raising basically takes up the surplus capacity that was put aside by our previous fund investors prior to us hard closing in December 2017. So we are not looking to raise any more money. VG1 will not have any more raisings for at least the next 3 years. We have no retail fund. We have not applied for any retail AFSL, so we are not looking to create any other way to access the strategy. Our US dollar fund, Cayman funds, will not be open. And if you've tried to invest with us over the last couple of years as a new investor, you haven't been able to. So we are very focused on performing, and we think that you can perform and perform in a relatively unhindered fashion, you know, at our level for a very considerable period of time. Where do we think we sort of maybe start having issues as at today in today's dollars? I don't know. We've run a bit of math. Probably, you know, about in the, you know, and I'm going to be vague here, but I'm going to say in the $10 to $15 billion range, we start to have some issues, less on the long side, more on the short side. Because we just, you know, the positions just have to get smaller instead of having, you know, 3% or 2.5% in something that's an outright fraud. You know, and there's a number of accounting frauds out there that, you know, ultimately get their just desserts. You know, they can be quite profitable, and, you know, it's nice to have them at 2.5% or 2% or whatever it may be. And look, we've got a $600 million short book. It's quite diversified. But we want to be able to get paid for our work. You know, I know a really smart guy who's always said, you want to get paid for your work. And we do a lot of work, we want to get paid for it, and the handicap as size grows is just on the short side, really. So 10 to 15 bills sort of feels like where it could potentially impact returns. So we've got heaps of compounding capacity. And as you can see from the way that we operate, we don't discount. Everybody pays the same fee. And yes, you know, the management fee is important, but you've got to remember with our management fees, we also incur all the other costs of running our funds and structures. So our true drop-through management fees really only about 1.2% or thereabouts, because we pay all the other costs that other funds charge on top as a hidden cost. So once you pay us 1.5%, we pay everything else. And that's the same for not just VG1, but our Aussie dollar fund, our US dollar Cayman fund, and our managed accounts. But what we're focused on is obviously the performance fee. And the performance fee is because we perform. And so we're focused on performance. And We don't want to asset gather, because asset gathering is really a mentality focused on maximising management fee, and we think that that's a suboptimal way to succeed and put your client's interests first. We would much rather not asset gather and be focused on performance, and then our clients prosper, our clients grow their capital, and we continue to compound our own capital, because this is what we're invested in ourselves personally, and we generate performance fees.
That's great. Couldn't agree more. Thanks very much.
No worries.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jordan J. Shilpov, WIG Capital Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Rob. Just a follow-up question, and thanks for answering my one on short selling. I know that was a bit off topic, so I'll keep a couple others for the roadshow maybe. But, yeah, just picking up on this, these questions about management fees and performance fees, as the one of the other questioners pointed out, you're obviously working very hard to align the interests of investors with VGI Partners as the manager. And I noticed you've cited Charlie Munger's anecdote about the old Roman system for building arches as a kind of moral standard on the website. Mr. Munger is also on record for saying that he believes the fairest possible fee structure is actually one that has no management fees at all. So I was keen to hear what your thoughts are on that and whether or not you've actually considered substituting part of the management fee for a higher performance fee.
Yeah. Well, look, when I get Charlie Munger's net worth, which I think is sort of, what, $4 or $5 billion, I think I might start espousing zero management fee philosophies as well. But given that Charlie Munger, the Munger partnership and the Buffett partnership had, you know, extraordinarily high management performance fees, and then they moved to higher performance fees, you know, is that something that we would consider? I don't, you know, but we haven't really talked about it. We like the structure that we have. It means that we, you know, have been able to invest from day one with a relatively low fund base. If you look back, you know, when we started in 2008, $110 million under management, you know, we took all the management fee and invested in capability. And if you look at the capability and the expertise that we've built and established with two research offices in New York, one in New York, one in Tokyo, and then our main office here, zero marketing personnel, zero BDM, zero sales, all research, 14 people in research, plus all of the consultants and experts and specialists that we have, you know, we take that management fee and we invest in capability to execute. And we continue to invest. And we've got to a point now where there's a bit of scalability. Would we look to consider another strategy or a different adjustment in management fee? No, not at this stage. It's not something that we're going to consider. And you know, the reality is that when you constrain the amount of capital under management, which is what we're doing, we're taking a very different strategy than most other managers. Most other managers have BDMs, they've got salespeople, they're continuing to grow, they want asset gather. We're doing the opposite. We're closing it, we're keeping it relatively tight, certainly in a global sense. It's a very modest pool of capital in a global sense for a global strategy. You know, we think that that's got a scarcity premium in it, and the scarcity premium is the management fee that nets to 1.2%. We feel as if it's very competitive. We feel our performance fee is competitive. We've been charging 1.5% and 15% before, you know, the industry started to move down there. We've been at this fee level for 11 years. And we feel like the returns that we've delivered have shown that people are getting extremely good value for money. And as long as we continue to deliver performance by constraining the amount of capital under management, that is by keeping it closed and compounding capital due to performance, we feel as if we have a very good alignment of interest. But you know, is that an opportunity in the future to go to just a performance type model? Time will tell, but at this stage it's not something that we're considering for the current strategy or our potential other strategies that we are considering post-IPO, which we've articulated we might be looking at in the prospectus document.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Shou Yang with Micro Equities Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just want to ask about the personnel expenses. In the prospectus, the last three calendar years, it's gone from 4.9, 6.2 to 7.6 million. Just want to understand what proportion of that is base versus variable remuneration.
Okay, that's a good question. I might hand that one over to Doug Tynan, who's in the room. It's a good question, and the short answer is the majority of it's base salaries, and the bonus component does change year to year. Just the bonus pool component of it changes year to year, just based upon individual and group performance. Not specifically tied to performance fees, I think is where your question was going. Robert Luciano and myself do not participate in those bonus pools and will not be going forward. That's detailed in the prospectus. And the majority, or more than 50% of that, is base salaries, and the reason it's been growing lately is we've grown the team, the depth and breadth of the team. We also have a new office in Tokyo, and we're just always looking for very good people to add to the team.
Okay, great. Second question, just in terms of new fund or strategy development, just wondering whether, you know, there's anything imminent under consideration and any of those costs are already embedded within your current operating expenses.
We can't comment on future plans or outlook. We've discussed in the prospectus that the cash on the balance sheet will be used for strategic opportunities with, I think the terminology was, clear adjacencies to our existing strategies. But what I can answer is that those clear adjacencies, when you've got 14 people in your investment team and you've got three offices which are just research focused, you don't need to increase costs.
Okay, I understand. And the last question, just on your performance fee calculation, is performance fee done on a whole fund level or is that on a series accounting basis?
Can you ask that question again? Is it done on a whole level?
Like a whole fund level, or is it done on the individual investor series basis, the performance fee calculation?
Oh, it's done. It's done at a fund level. It's, well, I'm going to hand it over to my CLO. You can answer that.
Yeah, sorry, it is at a fund level. So we use equalisation accounting in the funds, not series accounting. So the short answer is yes, at the fund level.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from Bill Guthrie with Guthrie Family Superfund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Robert, I missed part of your conference call, which I've found very enlightening and very good, thank you. So this question may already been asked. If I purchase, I'm going to take up all my current entitlements. However, if I purchase more of the shares on market, the rights shares on market, does that mean that I'll also have the opportunity to get a 1-for-4 distribution of the priority, additional 1-for-4 of the priority offer as well?
Yeah, look, I'm going to, I'll leave that to Adam Philippe to answer.
Mr. Guthrie, you can, so there's two options if you wish to access more of this offer. You can purchase some rights currently trading on market, which
yes,
are trading today and through to close of business
yep,
tomorrow. That will give you the opportunity.
Yep.
You can also apply for overs as part of your existing entitlement issue. And
so that may be a better way to do it based on what you said before, that you may only have a 50 or 60% take-up rate.
Correct. And just to be clear, purchasing VG1 as it stands on market at present will not.
But we're talking about the rights. So VG...
I'm sorry if I misunderstood me there. Yeah, I'm just talking about purchasing further rights. Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. So if you purchase VG1R today, you are guaranteed for each right one share in VG1 at $2.34.
Yep.
And then for every $4 you put into VG1, you get a dollar of manager.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to check if that was applicable to the additional rights that are purchased. And
yes,
my second question, yes, so you've answered that. Thank you very much. My second question was, with these priority offer shares, I've forgotten what you call them, the company shares or whatever they are, at $5.50 or whatever it was, how tradable will they be once they're ASX listed? How do you feel how tradable they'll be?
Well, that's an impossible question for me to answer.
What I meant was, do you think, is it likely to be very tight, or will there always be a market?
Again, no, I can't answer that. All I can say is that the free float will be, we are doing the lowest possible free float as per the ASX requirements, which is 20%.
Yes.
If we could have done 10%, we would have done 10%.
Yes.
20% because that's the minimum, we've got some very long-term investors in our funds and our IMAs, and we've got some very long-term investors in VG1. So it will depend, I guess, on what the price does and people's views on what the manager is worth over time, and all those factors will come into play.
Okay, I understand. Okay, fair comment. Okay, thank you very much. Cheers.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Malcolm McLennan, private investor. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. I just had a question about the subscribing for overs. So if it's a $300 million placement and entitlement offer and a quarter of that gets access to the IPO, that's $75 million, which is obviously your IPO raise with being run by Moelis and seven other co-managers and joint managers. So will people that subscribe for overs through VG1 get access, will get priority over the public IPO? Because that's a bit hard to understand given there's a lot of mouths to feed there already.
Okay, so let's be very clear about this. The only way of getting guaranteed access to the manager is to take up VG1 shares. And you are correct. So we will get to the 6th of June and we will have people who have taken up their rights, and we will have people who have purchased rights on market who have also exercised those, which will give us a pool of demand which is satisfied first.
Yes. So if every single person takes up their rights through this recent offer and the placement, there'll be zero left for the offer run by Moelis.
So Moelis is coordinating this process overall, and Moelis is not incentivized to see any shares reach anyone other than existing VG1 holders.
Yes. Okay.
But when we get to the end of that process on the 6th of June, there will naturally be some level of shortfall because some people simply won't have opened their mail and won't have sent in checks, etc. We do have a level of discretion then as to how those shares that have not been taken up get dealt with. However, our plan is that people applying for overs will be properly looked after.
Okay, great.
And so there is no other constituency that is getting priority in dealing with those sort of shortfall shares other than people applying for overs.
Gotcha. Okay, so if I was... The reason why I asked the question, you say Macquarie is a co-manager, if I was going to sign up for stock on a separate HIN under the offer, I'm not going to have a high level of confidence that I'm going to get filled in that application.
Sorry, I don't understand the process under which you think you're applying there.
No, I'm going to apply under the VG1, but if I want more stock, I'm better off going through the overs process that I just spoke about. You've answered my question. Excellent. Thank you.
So you've got to go through overs or you buy the rights on market?
Yes. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced.
All right. Well, looks like we don't have any more questions. We might give it another 5 or 10 seconds to see if anyone else would like to ask a question. But while people are thinking if they've got any questions, look, hopefully we've answered your questions. People feel as if they're now reasonably well informed on the decision making. As I said in the very beginning, if you don't wish to take up your entitlement, please do sell your rights on market. We have very specifically structured this transaction in a unique fashion to ensure that all VG1 shareholders, regardless of whether they have the incremental capital to participate or not, will generate a return or some type of gain from this transaction by either participating in the entitlement, and we hope that there will be a share price appreciation in VGI Partners Limited, the manager. And if you do not wish to participate, because of the way that we have priced the manager, you are seeing value in your rights. And therefore, you can sell your rights and take that money off the table, and you still have your VG1 shares, and you have taken some incremental profit off the table. And that is our way of ensuring that all VG1 shareholders have been rewarded for their loyalty, and that VGI Partners is known as a manager of looking after its shareholders of its listed investment companies when it does a capital raising. And this is, we believe, the first listed investment company capital raising where, regardless of whether you participate or not, you receive a financial benefit. And that is our way of highlighting how we wish to operate as a firm and as an organisation, and how we would like to look after our shareholders in our listed investment companies. So with that, I think we might close. We don't have any other questions. And if you do have any follow-ups, please contact Victoria Arthur, who's running our investor relations team for VG1. She's given out her details, and Vicky, the email address again for you is
investor.relations@vgipartnersglobal.com.
All right, terrific. Okay, thank you very much, and have a good day. Bye-bye.